What's good and welcome to the Hockey Mailbag, the first sports podcast run entirely by the listeners. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, and each episode follows a simple format. You send me whatever hockey-related questions are on your mind, I provide the answers. If you want to be a part of the podcast, just send your questions to thehockeymailbag@gmail.com or to me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki, R-E-W-U-C-K-I. And to kick off the podcast ahead of the new season, we're going to start with a four-part series breaking down each of the four divisions of the NHL, making sure we give some love to each team along the way. Today's episode will focus on the Atlantic Division, the defending champs, the home of the champs, and a few other very intriguing teams as well. But we couldn't start anywhere else than the center of the hockey universe. I'm actually from Canada. I'm Canadian. And it's federal law up here to start any hockey media segment on the Toronto Maple Leafs, regardless of what the topic is. And so that's where we'll start with our focus on the Atlantic Division today. And our first question of the episode comes from Mr. D. Anthony. And Mr. D. Anthony asks the question that maybe we're all asking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. How much longer can the Leafs justify keeping Matthews, Nylander, and Marner together? It's a simple question, Mr. D. Anthony, and I say it comes with a simple answer. They can't justify it. It's beyond ridiculous at this point that Toronto keeps going back to the well over and over again, that this core group of players, I would say, along with John Tavares, is finally going to figure it out. I would argue no core group of players has ever been given so much after accomplishing so little come postseason time. And the reason why you can't justify keeping those three, those four together is because the Maple Leafs have built their team a specific way. We pay our high-end talent a huge portion of the cap, but they'll deliver when the chips are down. Maybe we find a diamond in the rough for our bottom six, but we pay our big dogs to be dogs come playoff time. It's a model, to be fair, that's worked before. Pittsburgh famously did it in like the mid-2010s, where percentage-wise it was pretty similar. But guess what? Crosby and Malkin turned into superheroes come playoff time, so they could get away with that. But the Maple Leafs, time and time again, just don't come through when it's needed in Game 7s, right? And what dooms the Leafs, and to me what makes the model of how they've built their team so fatally flawed, is that they cannot score in the postseason. Everybody throws out the cliches they can't defend because they're young and talented, but that's not the case. The Leafs have actually, over the last couple of seasons, been a pretty strong defensive team. You have three of the most talented players in the league, and they cannot get a goal 5-on-5. They can't even sniff a power play goal in the playoffs as well, as evident by the disaster class that happened on the man advantage against the Boston Bruins. And other than hope and luck, I would argue there's no real signs that that's going to be changing anytime soon. I could almost understand keeping the core together and they were just bad defensively. You know what I mean? Like they were losing 5-4 in the playoffs all the time, but it's like, if we can get them to tighten it up, we've got something here. But to me, it's the fact that they can't score. That's the biggest reason where if you pay guys to score and they're not doing it, you got to find a way to rejig your team and recompose your roster and find a better, maybe more equal composition to get things done when it matters. Now, the big problem for me when it comes to the Leafs too and how they've gotten to this point is that they blew it two off seasons ago. They just wasted an entire season last year by not making some kind of a big move, like either a coaching change or a trade of one of the core four before their no-moving clauses kicked in, right? Because that was the opportunity where if you don't believe in your group of players, you can move on from Mitch Marner, the guy that we all assume would have been moved there, and you can get a haul for him. And then you can make your team, right? You can reformat them in a new image and see if that gets it done. But if you believe in your group, then the coach and the message isn't getting the job done. And you move on from Sheldon Keefe and bring somebody else behind the bench. But you do neither, and you lean on the lame-ass excuse that Brad Treliving just got hired, so he can't make any major changes, and ultimately you're right back to where you started with. I'm blown away that that was the Leafs' actual explanation as to why nothing got done last year in terms of making a big move. Like, Brad Treliving knew who was on the team when he signed on for the gig. So go out there and make the team better, right? You weren't blindfolded before you took a look at the roster. And now they've got the same issues that have plagued the team for years. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not sold as great of a coach as Craig Berube is that he's going to come in and all of a sudden Marner, Matthews, Nylander are going to be over a point a game guys in the playoffs. But that's the bet that they're making. We'll see if it ultimately pays off. One quick note on Mitch Marner, by the way. I feel bad for the guy because to me, when I watch him in the postseason, it looks like a guy that cares so much and wants to win so bad for his hometown team that he's just completely in his head and it's just snowballed on him. Like he looks lost out there, overthinking everything, right? Like, I mean, kind of like Rory McIlroy trying to win the Masters. He wants to do it so much that he's never going to do it. Like that's how I feel watching Mitch Marner in the postseason. So I ultimately think it's going to be best for him and the Maple Leafs that they part their separate ways, but it's going to be fascinating one way or the other to see how far Toronto can go with Chief behind the bench this upcoming season. So thank you for the question to get us started there, Mr. D. Anthony. Next up, at Skrinsky keeps us going here. And Skrinsky asks, yay or nay on the Iser plan out in Detroit? All right. A little Red Wings action. Almost got it done at the end of the season last year, but still no return to the playoffs for the Wings. I would say I don't want to sit on the fence. Nobody likes that, especially when you're starting off a podcast, right? I'm going to say yay on the Iser plan still. And here's why. Stevie Y started in 2019. The Red Wings have got absolutely zero luck when it comes to the draft lottery. And that's, we don't like to acknowledge it. I think as sports fans, hockey or any other sport, you know what I mean? Like we don't like to acknowledge how much luck ultimately determines the fate of careers and franchises and things like that. But it really does because three consecutive draft lotteries where the Red Wings had either the number one odds or very good odds to jump up at the top of the draft. And they failed to move up and also move back in 2020, three spots, not just one, but three spots as well. And so how different do the Wings look if instead of their first three drafts, where it was Mo Sider, Lucas Raymond, Simon Edvinson, if instead they have Jack Hughes, Tim Stützle, and Luke Hughes? You know what I mean? Like nothing really changes in the grand scheme of things in terms of how Stevie Y operates the team, but you get a ping pong ball to go your way, and all of a sudden you're a genius instead of people doubting your grandmaster plan. So that, like, I think the Red Wings were done a little bit dirty in that respect where they just got no luck to get it done. But either way, you know what you have after those first three drafts. And I think where I kind of understand where Stevie Y is coming from is that we've got Dylan Larkin on our team. And you could have made the decision to either move on from him, get more assets, and chase the lottery odds again, or you keep somebody on your team that's a legit number one centerman and the hardest position to find in all of hockey, I would argue. And from that point on, that's where the Red Wings make the bet that we like Sider, we like Raymond. We'll see if Edvinson can live up to the billing as well. But we've got a number one center, and we're not letting go of that, and we're going to try to find a way to hit a home run in the draft at some point and maybe get lucky in terms of a trade. And I totally understand that because how many number one centermen ultimately do get traded over the past 10 years? Like Jack Eichel comes to mind. But other than that, it's a bunch of 1A, 1B, 2A guys that don't quite fit the billing. So if you've got that there, you feel like some of the pieces are starting to come into place. I can understand the logic behind what Stevie Y is trying to build out there in Detroit. I, completely honest, do not love the amount of money that was given out to Kopp, Compher, Sherratt, Justin Hole, Jeff Petrie, Olimata, a few others. Not sure what the plan is in goal just yet. Maybe they're just waiting for Sebastian Kosa to get a little bit closer to prime time. But I did say as a whole, I understand the thought process behind the decisions that Iserman's making for the Red Wings. And look, I think he's one of the sharpest minds in hockey. And I think he's going to find a way to get it done for Detroit. It might take a little bit longer than people anticipated, but I'll believe in the mind that built the Tampa Bay Lightning mini dynasty that took place a couple years ago and for him to figure things out and push Detroit back to where they were a couple years back. But thanks for the question there, Skrinsky. By the way, I actually met Steve Yzerman in a NHL press box a few years back. Maybe this is why I'm a big fan of Stevie Y as the GM. Acknowledged me in the hallway, gave me a little head tap. How's it going? I think I melted into the ground about 20 feet below the earth at that point. Muddle out like a hurlo, right? But it was the fact that he acknowledged me that I'm like, hey, he's a decent guy. He might be able to get it done as a GM. So it'll be intriguing to see how the Red Wings show up there. A lot of teams trying to make that next step out there in the Atlantic Division. Speaking of that, we go to our next question here, which comes from Taylor. And Taylor, speaking of rebuilding teams, trying to take the next step, ask which rebuilding team will leap the highest in the standings this year. Is it Buffalo? Is it Montreal? Or is it Ottawa? Very good question, Taylor. And a lot of fan bases that have suffered through quite a bit these past couple of years, specifically the poor souls in Buffalo. And you could probably throw Ottawa into that mix as well. At least Montreal has the history of winning Stanley Cups, right? I mean, the easy part of this question for me, I would say Montreal comes in third of those trio. I love the slow, methodical rebuild that Kent Hughes and company are rolling out there in Montreal. They're on the right track. It's just, it's a year too early this year. Like, come back to me next year, might have a different answer, but the blue line still needs another year of seasoning. Fascinated to see what happens with Patrick Laine, who I hope gets a shot with Nick Suzuki up front, but there's just too many more talented teams ahead of them in the standings right now to feel comfortable about Montreal leapfrogging three or four teams and picking up 20, 30 extra points in the process. So then it comes down to Buffalo or Ottawa. And I don't know why I'm not as high on Ottawa as maybe I should be. Maybe it's because it's been the same old cycle in Ottawa these past couple of seasons where it's the hype is at its highest right before the year starts. This is it. We're going to make the playoffs. They start the year 5-15 or something like that. They build it back up. And then we begin this all over where they just can't get out of, you know, that 10th, 11th place finish by the end of the season. So maybe it's a fact that it's just, I need to see it before I believe it. I look at their roster and it's good. Like, it's not a bad team, but I feel like they just need a lot to go right this year, right? Like, they need Stützle and Tkachuk to be 90-point players. If you're going to pay them as much as they do and play them as much as they do, they got to go from 70 points to 90 points. You need a full season out of Josh Norris or Shane Pinto. Batherson needs to have another great campaign like he did last year. And then you need Sanderson and Chabot, one of those two, just maybe both of them, honestly, to both step up and live up to the billing of where they were picked. I think the goaltending is actually going to be solid for them this year with Allmark and Forsberg. That was mandatory. But I don't know. I just feel like maybe there's a lot of things that need to go right for Ottawa to finally get out of the quicksand of the mushy middle and poke their noses into the postseason for the first time in quite some time. But then I get to the Buffalo Sabres, and that's the other difficult part of this, where I was so in on the Sabres last year. So in. Put my reputation on the line that Buffalo was going to find a way to crack 100 points, and the long playoff drought is over. And then they fall flat on their face and embarrass me. So I have retired from picking the Buffalo Sabres to finally make the leap. I'm not going to do it anymore. They make me look dumb. They frustrate me. I'm not even a fan of the team. I believe in them. They throw up on themselves. So I've recused myself from ever picking the Sabres to make the playoffs again. Having said all that, I effing love the Sabres to make the leap this season. I can't quit it. I just can't do it. I believe in the roster. And look, it's littered with, there's good reason to believe in it because it's littered with number one picks, top 10 picks. Like Optimus Prime and Tage Thompson down the middle, who I think is going to have a big, big bounce back season. I look at the roster and they if they can just get off to a quick start and avoid, you know, a morale killing 8-12 start to the season, like if they could just go 14-5. Right. And build off that momentum over the course of the year. I think they're going to find a way to finally do it. And I still believe in the 1-2 punch of Thompson and Cousins down the middle. Like when Cousins figures it out, he's going to be a beast. I think Darlene's ready to take that next leap. I think Owen Power can improve on his first couple seasons into the league. I mean, if Bowen Byram can get back to what he was in the Avalanche Cup run, then Buffalo's ready to go. And I think they're in a much better position goaltending-wise this year, where Luukkonen showed that he can play at a high level at the NHL, but Devon Levi isn't being thrust with all the responsibility of being a number one. You've got James Reimer there, a solid, unspectacular veteran. Between those three goalies, I think they can get solid enough goaltending play to finally jump out of there. So don't embarrass me again. I'm believing in you, Buffalo. I'm putting my neck out there on the line. Thanks for the question there, Taylor. We move on to our final three and go out to Florida again. Or not again, we go out to Florida for the first time. And Steve asks, did Tampa do Steven Stamkos dirty? Is this Stammer that sent the question? I would say a little dirty. Not a lot dirty, maybe a little dirty. There's two different ways to look at this in terms of how the Steven Stamkos era in Tampa Bay came to an end. I think every professional sports franchise owes it to a legend of their team to treat them with a level of respect and decency and honesty. And I don't feel like the Lightning and Julien Brisebois necessarily did that. Going back to the last offseason, where there was basically no talks, they froze him out. You could tell he was pissed about it. If you don't want to bring him back, just be upfront and honest about it with him and tell him, Steven, you've done amazing things for this franchise. We're going to retire your number one day, but we believe in a different vision and path for our team, and you're not a part of that. Best of luck moving forward. Right? And then they throw the 8-year contract worth $4 million a season, which he was obviously never going to sign that. Like, that to me was a bit of a slap in the face. That's where I say a little dirty. I don't like the way they went about it. But the other way to look at this is, did Julien Brisebois make the Tampa Bay Lightning better? The answer is yes, he did. Because he took the Stamkos money and basically just turned it into Jake Guentzel. And who would you rather have? Even with Guentzel getting $1 million more on the cap. 34-year-old Steven Stamkos or 29-year-old Jake Guentzel? I think we would all lean towards Jake Guentzel at this point in their careers. And that Guentzel point Kucherov line, if that's who they throw out there, I mean, that's the best line in hockey. So on top of that, the moves they made on the back end, bringing McDonough back, getting J.J. Moser into the mix. Julien Brisebois did his job. Ruthless, cold-hearted, yes. But he made the Lightning a better team this season, in part letting Steven Stamkos go and trying to bring in a little bit more youth and talent and new faces, injection of all that into the Lightning squad this upcoming season. Don't love the way he did it, but I can understand that as a GM, he certainly did his job and Tampa's in a much better position to get back to where they were last season. So thank you for the question there, Stevie. Two more to go. Next up on the clock is Zozo. And Zozo asks, Jeremy Swayman at 10-plus mil a season seems a bit crazy for the Bruins. No? It does, Zozo. Great handle, by the way. But it's a simple question. That's too much money for Jeremy Swayman. Next question. No. But look, Swayman's a great goalie, but he's only played just over 100 games regular season at the NHL level. And his numbers are really good, but nothing eye-popping to the point where you would be like, yes, we are going to make you the second highest paid goalie in all of hockey. I get the caps going up, all that. But to me, he hasn't quite earned 10-plus million a season when you don't even know if Jeremy Swayman can handle a full starter's workload over the course of a regular season campaign because he's played roughly 40 games alongside Linus Ullmark these past couple of seasons. I don't even think Swayman's camp, to be honest, is looking for 10 mil a season. This is just how negotiations work. We throw a high number, you throw a low, we meet in the middle at 8 years, 8.5 million, and away we go. So that's how we see this one ultimately playing out. And I think we see Swayman in camp well before the regular season gets underway. But thank you for the question there, Zozo, on the Bruins. I actually like the Bruins, by the way, to finish first in the Atlantic Division this upcoming season. They're going to find a way to get the most out of Elias Lindholm, I think. And all the Bruins do, the 100-point seasons fall out of their pockets as they walk down the street. So I'm a big believer in Boston, at least in the regular season, to have themselves quite a campaign this year. And now for our final question of the episode. maybe we save the best for last, as you might have known. Haven't mentioned the defending champs just yet. And that's where we'll cap things off. And the final question comes from Aaron. And Aaron asks, what's keeping the Florida Panthers from repeating as back-to-back champs? Thanks for the question there, Aaron. Honestly, this might sound stupid. Maybe it's not. But I would say the biggest thing keeping Florida from repeating is just the fact that it's very rarely done. And they've played an insane amount of hockey the past couple of seasons. That's really it, right? There's, again, I bring up luck and how nobody likes to acknowledge its existence in terms of team building, chasing championships, things like that. But look, the Colorado Avalanche have two of the five best players on the planet, Mikko Rantanen as well. They've gotten past the second round one time since Nathan MacKinnon was drafted. It's just so difficult year in, year out to make deep playoff runs. You need a team that is just consistently better than everybody else. And you've got to get a ton of breaks along the way as well. That's really it. I mean, you look at the Panthers roster still. Yes, they're going to have to weather the loss of Brandon Montour. But they've shown with the Gus Forsling acquisition that they do a better job of anybody in terms of finding a diamond in the rough and polishing them and grabbing a top four defenseman for cheap. They did it with Montour. They did it with Forsling. Now they're going to try it with Adam Boqvist, and I'm not necessarily betting against them to do that again this year. Defensively, they're going to be okay. I mean, some question marks in goal with Bob starting to creep towards his late 30s and no real idea what Spencer Knight is going to be, although he's got a ton of potential and hype. And if he can get back to where he was a few years back, they will be just fine, but still some question marks there. Up front, though, the Panthers have, outside of Edmonton, the most enviable forward group, I would say, in the entire NHL. Like a great mix of high-end skill and grit and nastiness. They've shown they can get it done come playoff time. They elevate all of their games when the going gets tough, right? And, I mean, who knows if Anton Lundell takes a step forward, how much more dangerous that forward group can get. So, like, you look at the roster, and there's not a great explanation as to why they can't get it done. I would just say, simply, it doesn't happen a whole lot. It's insanely difficult to make it three consecutive trips to the finals, even though the Lightning just recently did it. Outside of time being their biggest enemy, there isn't a great answer as to why Florida can't get it done yet again. But am I going to bet on them to do so again? I don't think so. It's just so tough. And I wonder if maybe a slow start to the year gives them a bit more of an unsavory path to try to make it back-to-back-to-back trips to the Cup Finals, and it's just too much for them. They don't get it done this year, but maybe they go back to the big dance 2 years after that. So there's really not a whole lot to dislike about the Florida Panthers right now. I imagine they're back at it. I just don't think it's going to be this upcoming season through no fault of their own. But, I mean, you can make the case the Panthers are the envy of the entire NHL. In terms of having to manage a GM that knows exactly what he's doing in Bill Zito, a crime that he hasn't won GM of the year yet, by the way, probably going to happen sooner than later, an absolute beauty behind the bench in Paul Maurice, and then a group of players that can play it any style that you want. So I think Panthers fans are going to be just fine, and you can revel in the win. The only issue in terms of Florida is that it was a bad, bad summer to be an ice cold beer the state of Florida with the Tkachuk boys roaming around there. they did a number. And you wonder, it might be a literal hangover, not even a metaphorical hangover that the Panthers have to try to overcome there. But I imagine they're going to be one of the teams in the mix by the time the playoffs start to wind down. But thank you for the question there, Aaron. And on that note, we cap things off for the podcast once again. I'd like to thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of the Hockey Mailbag. Always appreciate hanging out with you beauties. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, if you want to be a part of the show, just send your questions over to thehockeymailbag@gmail.com or to me on Twitter at @Brandon_Rewicki, R-E-W-U-C-K-I. Don't forget to check out the other three episodes of our four-part series breaking down each division in hockey ahead of the NHL season. Until then, though, until next time, I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, and this has been the Hockey Mailbag. I look forward to talking puck with you guys again soon.